This is Cave Scott Allen of OJCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on March 21st, 2013. Today we are talking to repeat serial guest Damien Gard and also welcoming Robert Sweeney. And we're talking to you guys about what you've been up to with Windows Store apps. So, Damien, we last talked to you, I believe it was episode 50 or something. What have you been up to since then?
Yeah, hi, John. Yeah, it's been a little while. I left the Link to SQL EF team and spent a bit of time at Xbox working on the marketplace. I got to play with all the cool MVC stuff out of Scott Goo's org, and then headed down to Netflix for a year working on their various apps. And then now created a startup with Robert.
Okay. So you worked with Robert, I believe?
Yeah, Robert was my lead at Xbox. So we actually got the opportunity there to rewrite the whole of Xbox.com. We were just working on the marketplace part of it, but it was nice to be on a big greenfield development.
Wow. Okay. So maybe if we get time later, we can discuss some of that. But so then, Robert, is your background then in web completely, or have you done some web in Windows Store?
I've kind of been all over the place. I started my career as a developer on the Windows operating system, and so I was there for 4 years, and then decided I wanted to jump on the web bandwagon and moved over to Xbox where I could do some web development. After being there for a couple of years, ASP.NET MVC was just barely coming out, and we decided it'd be a great fit for the re-architecting of the site that we were in the process of doing. And that's when I recruited Damien to come and work for us over in the Xbox division, and worked with him there for a couple of years, and eventually went down to Netflix, ended up dragging Damien down there with me, finally convinced him to move after about 3 or 4 months of pestering him, and worked on initially Silverlight for the web, but then also Silverlight on the Xbox and the Windows 8 app for Netflix. So mostly front-end user interface development is what I've been doing for my career.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of all over. yeah. Were you doing front-end work on Windows as well then?
Yeah. I worked on the Windows Shell team, and I worked on the folder sharing UI, the zip folder, the users files folder. So if you click on, what used to be in the start menu, if you clicked on your username, that folder that you see, and worked on a feature that didn't make it, PC to PC sync, in the Vista timeframe. But pretty much exclusively focused on UI components for the Windows operating system.
So all these things you guys have been talking about, Netflix and Xbox, are both, you know, large apps, huge scale. What was that like?
So the launch of the Xbox.com site was very interesting. Originally, we'd planned on putting the marketplace on 8 servers. Given that it was all written in .NET and MVC, we had high hopes for performance, and it launched very well, except for one small problem whereby we'd provided an API to somebody and they'd wrapped that API and somebody else had called it inside a loop. But apart from that, it scaled very, very well. In fact, we ended up launching with just 2 servers.
Wow.
But handled the whole load initially, and then there was a bit of fine-tuning, and it launched very well.
Okay, so let's move from Xbox and Netflix to kids playing with stickers. How does that happen?
I get to Robert.
So Damien and I set up this app development company right after the Windows 8 announcement at Build, and we had been wanting to start our own company for a while. So through a connection, we were put in touch with some people at Microsoft who were looking for developers to test out the app submission process and the documentation for Windows 8. So that gave us the opportunity to build whatever app we wanted and get it into the store before it was opened up to the public. And so Damien and I and a few other friends got together and threw out some ideas. And originally it started out as a Fuzzy Felt app. You remember Fuzzy Felt from when you were a kid and how much fun that was. And we decided to build a sticker book for kids. I've got 3 young girls at the time. They were 3, 4, and 7. Yeah, so that's where the idea came from. And we started working on it. We only had about 3 months to get it done, working on it evenings and weekends, working like crazy. Initially, when we started building the app, we had planned on having friends and family help us with the illustrations. And because we had no budget, we had, you know, what money we had in our pockets, and turned out that we just couldn't get the quality we wanted for the graphics and illustrations for the app. So a designer friend of ours suggested looking on guru.com or Elance for overseas designers. So we did. I spent a long time looking through the portfolios of various illustrators overseas, and their work was just amazing, and they were so affordable. We decided to spend just a little bit of money and have some really high quality illustrations done, and that made a huge difference for us in taking it from a little side developer project to something that actually looked like it was really professional and put together and had some effort put into it.
Okay, so from the point of view, it's always a challenge with an audio podcast talking about something visual, but the idea here is you open up the app and then you have some different themes, like, you know, there's an underwater or a farm or the magical unicorn rainbow happy time one, and then the kids pick stickers from the bottom and they can bring them up into they can stick them, and unlike a normal sticker book, they can peel and restick them as many times as they want, and they can stretch them and turn them, both of which my five-year-old, like, she loves that. She'll take, you know, like a tiny baby chick, and she'll make it enormous like Godzilla, and it'll be chasing all the cows. Like, and she'll crack herself up for hours with that.
Yeah, I love watching the kids play with sticker tails. They do things that I never would have thought they'd do. I had an early prototype to one of my daughters, and she grabbed a bunch of the little ponds and decided to make an ocean. And so just, you know, this is before we even had the ocean underwater theme, and just put hundreds of these ponds out there and then put the farm floating and the cows on the farm on top of the barn. And they're just so creative. It's really fun to see what they do. Their drawings are a lot more interesting than the ones that adults make.
Yeah, it was interesting as well, getting kids together for some little informal user testing we did. Robert invited a bunch of his kids' friends over, and we sat down with our notebooks and made notes about what they were doing and trying to do. And we weren't really telling them how to use the app. And that was quite an eye-opener. I mean, I'm sure we've all been in regular user testing, but when there's such an age gap between you and your audience, it's really interesting to see what they come up with. So like some of the things that originally we had a little toolbar above each sticker with things like delete and rotate and flip direction. And you know what? The kids didn't like that. For example, for deleting, they just tried to throw it off the side of the screen all the time. They just pushed it out of the way like they would anything else, you know, in that kind of environment where they're sat down at a table playing with things. They just push it off to the side. And so that's now how you remove a sticker.
Wow. So, and was this kind of like an iterative? Did you do multiple test things with them?
Yeah. So my wife actually, so we got these kids from she ran a joy school at the house. And so every, twice a week they would come over, and that was great because we would steal them one at a time, or sometimes in group settings, steal them away from for those who don't know what joy school is, it's kind of like a preschool that you run out of your house. So we got to do this several times week after week. We would see what they were doing, make changes. And sometimes there were a couple of times we actually made changes right then to the app and then gave it right back to them and got to see the improvements right then. And
so when you got in there and you saw how the kids, you know, they didn't like the flip and rotate, and they just wanted to be able to flip it or rotate or just, you know, throw it off the screen to get rid of it. Do you think that'll influence the way that you design future Windows 8 or touch enabled apps?
Do you mean like the gestures across the board for Windows apps, or?
Yeah, kind of. So, I mean, those kind of glyphs are kind of universal with UIs that are created by developers. Like, oh, they want to flip something, so I'm going to make two arrows that are kind of going in a circle, and that's what the people will click. And, oh, I want to delete something, so I'm going to put a little X there, and of course I'll have the pop-up that says, are you sure you meant to click that? And then they kind of go on.
Wow, it's like you saw V1. Yeah, we actually found a couple of interesting things when the kids were trying to use these, what we thought were standard gestures and standard icons. One of them was, in fact, that flipping or mirroring, we actually managed to completely remove that from the app by simply getting it to follow the direction of your finger. So if you drag the dog to the left, he's suddenly looking left. And if you want him to look right, then you just drag him right again a little bit, which the kids absolutely loved. I'm pretty sure they actually suggested it.
And you know, after using that, I want that. Like, that is an interaction gesture. It's just so natural. It's just like we're talking about with kids, that they'll come up with things you wouldn't normally. But now, as I'm moving things around, you know, and like, you know, art programs, and then I'm frustrated that I have to go in and switch the tool and all that. And it's like, why can't I just move it back and forth? You know?
Yeah, that
seriously,
was a good one.
I'm starting to think that all touch interfaces should be tested on children first. And in fact, all the gestures should just flow from children. Because when you see them use things like that, and you see them try to interact with it, then you really get a truly intuitive interface. Because, you know, that's what they're trying to do. If you give it to a person, they have all these preconceived notions about how computers work and what they should be able to do. And, or not a person, but an adult. I guess, well, you know, kids are people too, right?
There was a couple of other interesting things as well. Like, we all take for granted pinch and, you know, and the opposite of pinch for zooming. It turns out kids aren't very good at this because their hands aren't very big. So if you give kids a, you know, a surface or something, they're really going to have a hard time moving these fingers enough to actually zoom it to like giant chicken size.
Mm-hmm. Which is important.
Which we found, initially they tried using two fingers, which was kind of interesting. But that was one of the areas we decided to actually deviate and actually provide a little handle. Because again, the two fingers was really hard, even on multi-touch trackpads for kids. And we wanted to, of course, support mice, trackpads, and the screen. So that was interesting time of experimentation.
Okay. So I'm curious kind of what the flow was. So you started, you built some prototypes, you found out that you wanted to bring in a professional designer. They give you illustrations. And then how, you know, what was that interaction like? They were basically giving you a bunch of Photoshop files and you were converting them to use in the app?
I'm sure you can find illustrators who will do the whole conceptualization for you, but the ones that we were hiring, because we're on a budget, we had to provide, basically we provided storyboards for them. On a pencil and paper, I would sketch some ideas of what I thought one of the background scenes would look like. I'd take a picture with my phone, and then I'd put it all in this PowerPoint. And then we'd send that off to the designer. They'd send us back a bid, and then every couple of days they would send us the parts that they'd finish. And because they were working in on the other side of the globe, they were usually working in the middle of the night. And so there were a couple of times when I was up quite late having a dialogue via email or IM. But usually what would happen is I'd wake up in the morning and there were new illustrations that they would send me via email. And until they had them all done, they were just a little preview in JPEG formats. And that was a lot of fun, waking up in the morning and seeing what they'd done. I mean, they were just such... I'd see them take my pencil and paper sketches and make them beautiful, and was a lot of fun. And my kids got really into it. They would come running in the morning to see what new things that the artists had made. And once they were finished, they'd deliver. They were pretty flexible. They would have delivered in pretty much any format that we'd asked for. Some images were done in vector format, and so they gave us Illustrator files, and then we exported them ourselves into PNG. And the other ones were bitmap rastered images, and like the unicorn, and they provided those in PSD format, and we exported those. Again, we could have asked for them in PNG, and they would have done that for us. There's actually multiple image sizes included in the sticker packs to make them look better at when they're scaled down at smaller sizes. So we wrote some tools to automate the process of exporting the images at different sizes, and that made the process a lot easier.
Okay. And then one of the interesting things here, there's a free version where you get the farm stickers and the farm stuff. And then there's other sticker packs you can download and you pay for those, right?
That's right. Yeah. So we went with the in-app purchasing model because we tried to look at it from our perspective as parents. If I'm looking for something to entertain my kids, I'm not ready to make a commitment up front of spending even $2 or $5 or whatever on a game if I don't know if they're going to like it and if it's going to keep them entertained. And so we wanted to make sure that it was free for them to try out. And so that's why the app is free, and it comes with a free set of stickers, the farm stickers. And then the hope is that the kids enjoy playing with the farm stickers and want to add variety or play with the different types, like the unicorns. I mean, we were very intentional about putting the big giant rainbow unicorn where it was because we knew that would be pretty popular with the little girls, and they would encourage their parents to buy that for them. And It allows people to continue to use it free or to expand their collection if they run out of things to do.
So technically, is that difficult to handle, having additional downloadable content in a Windows Store app?
Yeah, that was something that the Windows SDK doesn't provide a lot of help with. So we had to create our own packaging format for the stickers and the metadata about each game. We also created a mini preview version of that pack, which is just enough to download to show you on the homepage and let you see what you'll actually get without having to download, you know, tens of megs. And then making sure, of course, that the purchase actually downloads it, and that these downloads can resume and that existing packs can be updated. So that was kind of interesting.
So then how are you, like, what is that backed by? Are they downloading that from your server then?
They're actually pushed up on a CDN that we have with Max CDN. I think you guys may have heard of them. In fact, I may have got the recommendation from one of you guys, actually. That lets us not worry too much about the bandwidth, because obviously there are quite large packs. And obviously on a game like this, you don't want to be burning up a lot of bandwidth on free use.
Yeah, I would add that the in-app purchasing component is really easy to implement in Windows Store apps. It's just an API call where you say, show the purchase UI for this ID, and it takes care of it for you. But then delivering your content or unlocking whatever features that does in your app, you're all on your own there. So that was a little bit more painful, but part of it's just the nature of the app that we developed. The assets that are in these sticker packs are quite large, and so the downloads end up being big. So we needed a CDN for that.
So the idea is there's like you have some sort of gesture button or whatever, the user clicks it and then it calls off to something, does a purchase, and then you get a call back or something that says purchase completed. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, you get, so it's an asynchronous method that you call to do the purchase. And when it's done, you just check to see if the user has a license for that piece of content yet. They don't actually return if I recall correctly, there's no yes, the purchase was completed, or no. They just expect you to check to see if the user now has a license.
Okay.
So what did you guys do to track what was happening with your application? I think you mentioned that you had some sort of analytics in there.
Yeah, one of the things Robert and I really got addicted to at Netflix was the analytics everywhere. It's kind of interesting implementing a feature and seeing just how many people use it, and they have incredible infrastructure for that. Obviously, with us being a little startup, we don't really have that kind of infrastructure, and we couldn't really invest in building something like that. We're also big fans of Google Analytics for websites. So what we did is we basically, using some unofficial documentation and a bit of reverse engineering, wrote a small library that would put various events and details into Google Analytics, which turned out to be really provided a lot of interesting details that let us hopefully shape additional content. Lets us know which stickers are the most popular, lets us know which games people complete the most, which ones people have bought the most, which ones take too long perhaps, as well as giving us some idea of geographical location and maybe what languages we should be localizing into if we go down that route.
So my favorite feature of the analytics is the real-time Google Analytics support. It allows you to see who's using your app and that exact moment and where in the world they are. And it's really cool. Another thing that it lets us do is it lets us track how many people initiate purchase versus how many people complete the purchase, which has been surprisingly low. I think if I remember right, it's only about 10% of people actually complete a purchase. And unfortunately, there's no way to get any insight into where they're abandoning, because that's owned by the Windows user interface, the checkout flow. But at least we know.
Yeah, I wonder if it's, the kid clicks on the buy and then has to take it to their parents to complete the purchase, and the parents are like, no!
That's probably true.
Yeah, so it's really interesting seeing these stats. And so we decided to open source that, and it's now available on GitHub, called C# Analytics. And it has a whole bunch of extra features we need to redeploy into StickerTales.
Is that just for Windows 8 apps?
Right now, the samples and the auto analytics that let you wire it up really easily, that's just for Windows 8. But it does compile for .NET 4.5, and I have a version not yet checked in that works on Windows Phone 8. So hopefully that'll be checked in soon.
I'm going to put this in all my console apps. No, so so then as far as using it, is it, you said something about auto analytics. Is that basically you kind of turn it on and it intercepts some things, or how does that work?
So that's just basically a static class you can use to indicate when your app starts and when your app finishes. And what it does is it hooks into a whole bunch of pre-made events for Windows Store apps. So for example, it will hook into the share event, it'll hook into the suspend, resume, page navigation, and just wire up some basic event tracking for these things and page tracking so you can see what's going on in your app. It also obviously record the user's location automatically, your app version, and a few other pieces of information. Right now, that's all against the older Google Analytics API, the Urchin API. Just checked in some code that will allow it to go against the new Google measurement protocol that has a lot more app related stuff like exception tracking. So that's one of the things we need to backport to Stickertails. Not that we get many exceptions, but you can't have too many analytics.
That is one of the great things is when Stickertails crashes, when kids are using it, they're very forgiving. They're just like, oh, what happened? And they start it right back up and get right back in.
So have you guys considered bringing this to other platforms besides Windows 8?
The Stickertails?
Yeah.
Yes. So the next platform we'd like to get it onto is the iPad. And we're actually looking at something like Xamarin to make that process easier because we have a lot of – the majority of the code is touch interaction and a user interface, which isn't very portable. But there is a fair amount of downloading the packages and reading data out of them and things like that that would be nice to share between the two. And plus, neither of us know how to write Objective-C applications.
It's just too many square brackets.
It's a really ugly language.
Are there a lot of like specific integration things with Windows 8? I think I know I've seen the share part. Is there other, you know, like I don't know, tiles or stuff like that?
For Stickertails, yeah, we implemented live tile support. So the five most recent pictures are updated and displayed on your live tile, and to remind kids about the fun they're having and encourage them to get back in and pick up with the picture that they were using or they were working on. Share, obviously, and eventually we'd like to have search support in Stickertails to allow at least parents to search for things they know their kids like. What else? Is there any other interesting Windows 8 integration that Stickertails takes advantage of, Damien?
Uses a background download API.
Ah, yes. Yeah, that is pretty interesting. It was nice not to have to implement that. There's a really great API in WinRT that you give it a URL and tell it to download in the background, and it will start the download, and even if your app is suspended or shut down, the download will continue to happen, which is important when you're dealing with large downloads.
And it takes like care that. Of, you know, you're on battery power or on a metered network, it'll take care of that for you.
Yeah.
So like by default or whatever, it'll only download over Wi-Fi or like it won't download over an expensive internet connection, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and if it knows you're running out of your data plan, then it will suspend larger downloads and things like that. Or if you're on a metered network or you're charged per megabyte, it won't download over those networks. All that's done automatically.
Okay. How about technically, how is this put together? You know, did you go with the C# XAML or HTML JavaScript? And then also I'm curious what kind of other, you know, libraries, data storage, things like that you use.
Yeah, surprisingly, we went down the XAML C# route given our web background. I think part of that was that we felt the touch events in XAML were a lot easier to work with for these kind of gestures than they were in HTML. There's also, I think, early on in the Windows dev cycle when we started this, I feel like the XAML and C# support was a little better baked than the HTML support.
Okay.
As for libraries, I think SharpDX is probably the only extra library we use. And this is because one of the things they did in Windows 8 to improve the performance was to remove the ability to do writable bitmaps on screen, which, okay, it's fair enough. Unfortunately, they also removed the ability to write existing XAML on the screen into a writable bitmap, which basically means you cannot take a screenshot of your XAML app, which for creative apps is really, you know, it's a real pain. You can't do thumbnails. You can't easily do, you know, live tiles. And so what actually happened is we got in contact with one of the guys behind SharpDX, who basically part wrote a second renderer. So every time you finish a scene in Stickertails and hit that back arrow, SharpDX gets fired up and it re-renders the whole scene all over again just to create you a thumbnail.
Wow. Okay. So that sounds complex from their point of view, but from your point of view, it's an extra call or something to do that? Or is it more complex than that on your point of view?
It is more complex than that. Basically, they gave us enough of the sample code to actually draw in a similar way to what we do on the screen. But there are various differences. We had all sorts of interesting things trying to relate the sizes between the two different systems and the scale and rotation. Robert can probably tell you more about that. There's a bit of head scratching.
Yeah, SharpDX was a great find. I was preparing to go down the route of writing a bunch of native C++ code to do the image rendering, and stumbled on SharpDX, which was it's a C# library that wraps very thinly the DirectX API, so it's performs really well, and it's been used for a long time in WPF applications and other C# applications, and I can't remember his name, but the main guy behind it was just in the process of porting it to WinRT when we threw it on our app and started using it, and helped him uncover a couple of bugs, and he helped us figure out the linear algebra we needed to get the right transforms in place to render the images correctly. But it saved us so much time versus trying to do it in native code.
I'm sure it's a problem we'll rediscover again when we have to use OpenGL on the iPad.
Right. Okay. And so, I mean, it was C# XAML, but for the most part, I mean, it's all basically drawn in DirectX, or is that only for the actual like sticker interaction stuff?
Yeah, I know what you mean. The entire app is C# XAML. Interacting with stickers is also C# and XAML. We use controls with image controls inside them and listen to touch events. I think the WinRT APIs do a really good job of making it easy to detect manipulation events. The standard ones are exposed directly on the objects themselves, like manipulation started, manipulation ended. That's for drag gestures and things like that. But you can also hook in to the lower level gesture events and capture and recognize your own gestures. We only use DirectX for rendering a copy of the image to disk in JPEG format.
Okay.
But it's the only way to generate a thumbnail of the images.
Okay. And you found like performance was good enough just using kind of the standard XAML and control? Did you have to, fight anything? Did you run into any, problems performance-wise with just kind of, standard XAML approach?
So we learned a lot about performance tuning XAML applications while we were building the Netflix Xbox application. And there's obvious things you want to do, like using render transforms and not messing around with canvas X and Y and not using clipping masks and things like that will move the rendering off the GPU onto the CPU. And so we just followed those guidelines when building this app. And we were a little nervous when we ran it on a surface for the first time, but it worked great. The performance was great. And I didn't have any issues with moving the images around as you drag stickers around and things like that.
Yeah, so Surface and ARM has been very interesting. It works surprisingly well. I don't think we've ever had to make any code changes for the ARM versions or run into any ARM-specific versions, even with the SharpDX libraries. So that was a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I've been surprised so far with Surface RT, and they've recompiled a lot of open source apps, including like Audacity, which I use to edit this podcast. They've recompiled that for ARM. And so like on a jailbroken Surface device, Audacity starts up and runs just fine, and definitely wasn't underpowered.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of that underpowering thing may be because the cursor in Word lags, but for some reason it seems to also lag on my giant desktop machine, so that may not really be a Surface problem.
Right. A few last technical things I was wondering about. Data storage, did you use SQLite, or what do you use for storing information?
We use the tried and trusted format known as XML.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Okay. And then one last thing I was curious about, which is MVVM or other things. And I was chatting earlier with Damon, and he said you guys hate MVVM. So none of that, right?
I wouldn't say we hate it.
Yeah. MVVM is great for some things. And when I first started doing client development, I was a total MVVM zealot, and I wanted to use it perfectly and have no code behind. And what I learned quickly is that the Microsoft tools are not optimized for MVVM, and it takes a lot longer to build an application in a pure MVVM way. And quickly learned that for the types of applications that we're building, where it's a pretty thin client, most of the, like in the case of Netflix, all the hard stuff happens on the server and we're just displaying data. Best model is the view model pattern. And so we started transitioning while we were at Netflix to that pattern. And then at our own company, that's the primary pattern we use is view bound to models that are specially built for our UI. So they do change notifications and they're easy to bind and things like that. We still try and keep complex logic out of code behind, especially things that need to be unit tested or that can be reused, but we're not super religious about it.
Okay. And so then you moved off of Sticker Tales and building something for kids off to an application for Western Digital. So what was that like?
Yeah, we met with Western Digital last year, who were very interested in a Windows 8 application that would act as a companion application for their external storage. So for USB drives or network attached drives. It had some interesting challenges, one of them being that they really wanted to provide this all-up aggregate view of the media across these devices. So if you've got, say, two USB devices and a network device, you want it to all appear seamlessly together in the same user interface. So that was a project where we were able to use some additional components, the main one being SQLite, which holds the index of all the music, photos, and videos it's found across your devices to give you a nice, fast, fluid view and navigation through that content.
Okay, cool. So SQLite, how did you find working with SQLite? Was it, you use the SQLite.NET wrappers and, I mean, run into challenges, or was it pretty smooth?
For the most part, it was very smooth. We used the wrapper that was recommended by Tim Huer. I think it's available from his GitHub repository. We did a couple of slight tweaks, mainly because we wanted to get a little bit more metadata out through the various layers. You know, me, I can't resist writing SQL. didn't have any major problems with it at all. Actually, it worked quite seamlessly, and the migration code was pretty good as well. One of the interesting things was trying to represent a hierarchical system in a database, and I'm sure every developer's got a story where they've run into this. And obviously trying to store this tree structure in a database in a way that doesn't drive either the developer or the user insane with either perf or maintenance overhead.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took a few attempts to get that schema and the indexing process just spot on.
I remember somehow the word elephant ear. That's all I remember. Yeah. I had to do that once on a website, and it was this web hierarchy and it got so complex to query, you know, and the trick is always like, do you make it complex to insert or to query?
Yeah.
And my solution was yes.
Well, our query is, in fact, pretty simple. But yes, we have nested triggers in there for insert.
Yeah, Damien is a ninja when it comes to database stuff. He's done some pretty amazing things with that SQLite database in order to make it perform really well and to be able to do hierarchical queries.
Thanks.
So you mentioned testing. What is testing, unit testing, like? What's the process? What's the experience?
The unit testing is okay on the Windows Store apps. The test support in Visual Studio is pretty good. It's kind of odd that you need a store icon and various other things. I think the only real major problem we've seen there was you can't get code coverage. I'm not sure if that's a temporary limitation that Microsoft are going to address. In fact, that's one of the things in C# Analytics, the main driver actually for creating the .NET 4.5 project was just so I could get some test coverage numbers.
Do you use a framework for, you know, testing? Is it like XUnit or something? Or what?
So I've been using the basic Microsoft test framework. On C# Analytics, again, it's been a little bit tricky because some of the test expectations between the two environments, .NET 4.5 and Windows Store, are slightly different. So we ended up having duplicate tests and ifdefs, unfortunately, for things like validating the presence of exceptions in certain circumstances.
Okay.
It's a bit of a pain.
Did you look at other testing frameworks, or was it just kind of like, it's a bit of a pain, but not enough to worry about it?
Well, one of the things that always puts me off using an open source project is when I get it and there's a huge list of dependencies. I know that NUnit, for example, is really popular and a lot of developers will have it, but I just wanted something in the case of C# Analytics that people could just download and go. They don't need some other library. They don't need a logging library that we've chosen because we think it's better than the logging library they like and these sorts of things. Yeah, so that was the kind of the approach with the test, was just want something they can download, they can run the test, so they don't have to grab another package. It may not be the best test framework in the world, but it's one they've already got.
And as you're building Windows Store apps, what do you focus on? You're talking about coverage. Obviously, you want to test as much as possible, but what things do you focus on most or what works best for testing with the Windows Store app? Do you know what I mean? Are you testing services? Are you testing interaction?
Mostly, we're just kind of doing logic tests. It's obviously very hard to test interactive heavy apps like the Stickertales app, where almost all the things you can break will be quite obvious anyway on that sort of app. You know, if you break the image decoding, package decoding code, you'll know the first time you try and create a scene. And again, on some other apps, like on the Western Digital app, it's kind of hard to run unit tests that are going to plug in a drive and start indexing it. You could write tests to do this, but the amount of infrastructure you'd have to write would certainly weigh into that equation of just how beneficial it is.
I'd also add that WinRT isn't a great framework as far as unit testing goes. Coming from ASP.NET MVC, where it's super easy to put in mocks and stubs and things like that, it's not easy to do that. So you'd have to do a lot of wrapping of the WinRT APIs if you have code that you want to unit test that depends on WinRT.
Yeah, that's something we saw on Windows Phone and Xbox, and now on WinRT is a whole bunch of these static classes like the Data Transfer Manager. Yeah, it's kind of difficult to be able to do much with those things in terms of testability.
Right. Yeah, then you get into mocking frameworks and there's probably not the level of support there.
I tend to do my tests based on regressions. Regression development.
Regression-driven development, exactly.
Yeah. Regression-driven unit test development.
Ergot. Okay, so we talked, you know, high level about the apps you've been building. We've talked about the technical side about it. What about, you know, building and running a business that's selling Windows 8 applications?
So we do both original products like Stickertales and custom software development for other companies. And it's been a really interesting ride, riding the Windows 8 wave. There was a lot of hype and a lot of excitement right before launch, and we had a lot of interest from companies who wanted to build apps for Windows 8. And when real numbers started coming in, they weren't as amazing as people were expecting. And it's kind of an interesting challenge because Windows sells so many copies. When you talk of there's been numbers that have been floating around that Windows 8 has 2-5% penetration right now of the PC operating system space. And it doesn't sound like much, but that's a lot. That's tens and hundreds of millions of users out there. And so we are kind of fighting a battle against the media. The media never has anything nice to say about Windows, and especially in Windows 8. And so we have to educate people about the scale of Windows 8 and how it's still a great opportunity, a great platform to develop for. And they're going to reach a ton of people, and it's only going to get bigger. The estimates are 350 to 400 million copies of Windows 8 sold in the first year. So it's a huge potential market, both for companies that want to add a platform to their app portfolio, and for developers like us who want to make products.
See, I always thought that was interesting. Back prior to the iPhone, developing for the Mac was kind of a very, what would I call it? Not profitable, but it was very niche, but you could make a really good living at it if you made a good product and got in there, because there wasn't a lot of competition, you know, so you'd be able to write, you know, one really good app and put it on the Mac and, you know, you'd make a pretty decent living at it. Then once the iPhone came out, eventually, and they got their SDK and everything, and then suddenly iOS became the giant market leader, and, you know, Windows was kind of in that same spot. Or Windows 8 seems like it's in the same spot that the Mac was prior to iOS, where, you know, if you wanted to reach the widest amount of people, you developed for Windows. If you just wanted to make a really good living and just make one or two apps, you'd work on, a Mac app. And now it seems like if you really want to reach the most amount of people, you're going to write an iOS app. And if you want to just kind of make a good living, maybe a Windows 8 app would be a good place kind of to start. I don't know what if that makes any sense. I may have just meandered too much there.
I think what I'm hearing from that and what I was going to ask about as well is it's a smaller there's less competition. Like I know the iOS store and definitely the Android store. There's just a bazillion apps out there, and it's easier. Like you guys have been featured in the Windows Store, which is really, really hard to be featured in any of the other larger stores, right? So, I mean, that definitely there's the opportunity to be a must-have app is a lot more in reach. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it's nice to be up on the Windows homepage in the store. Like we're at one of the top entertainment picks for a whole week, which was really cool. I'm not sure if we port Sticker Tales to iPad that we could honestly expect anything like that sort of promotion from Apple.
You might. It's just kind of harder to get in there because there's, 50,000 fart apps and 25,000 of those press the button to level up RPGs.
Yeah. There's also a lot of Windows 8 apps with a cross for an icon and, it looks like file new project.
I think the Windows 8 store kind of skipped the stage where you could put an app in there and it would become successful without having to do any marketing. If you publish an app, I wouldn't expect it to be an overnight success or for it to just grow virally. A good rule of thumb, I think, is to spend at least half as much as you spend on development, spend it on marketing, even for Windows 8. So going back to Scott's comment about there not being as many people developing for Windows 8, good for Microsoft, not so good for small development shops like ourselves, is that the Windows 8 apps allow developers to use their existing skill set with XAML and C#. And so when they open the store, there are already legions of developers out there who had the skills to build apps. So that's been good. It's made it easier for the Windows 8 store to gain traction. But there's still there is a lot of competition.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Robert and Damien. It was great hearing about it. And I'm going to get back to making giant chickens attacking farm pictures. So thank you for that.
Great. We appreciate it. And it's nice meeting you guys.
Yeah, good to talk to you again.
I look forward to the iPad version. I'm sure my daughters would actually like it.
All right.
Let us know.
Another customer.
We'll add you to the beta list.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have this week. And we'll talk to you again soon on Herding Code. And I'm going to hang up now.